This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture with Tina Camellia, Sharmila Gunnison and Kelly Anissa. On the show today?
Yes, in our first story, we're looking at the mainstreaming of women's football. Is it finally getting the global attention it deserves?
And following that, a report in The Star today says many international students in Malaysia are being unfairly targeted by the police. So we're discussing that issue.
And on Twitter, on that note, we are asking you, do you think that all international students in Malaysia are treated fairly? Your options are yes, no, or it depends on their race. So join the conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900.
First, here's Aretha Franklin with Respect, BFM 89.9.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
What a song to start the hour,
yes.
Eh? So two more matches to go before the conclusion of FIFA's Women's World Cup. And earlier, Kelly was asking, is women's football finally getting the global attention it deserves?
Yes, but first, let's look at the history of women's football. Here is a clip from my interview with Richard Wee and Leslie Lim in April.
For quite some time, I think many people were not aware that actually women's soccer was banned at one time. I think FIFA was not in support of it until in the late 80s, or should I say mid 80s, when the trend changed. And in 1991, finally, FIFA organized the first women football, women World Cup, which was very successful.
Okay, so give us an overview of women's football. How successful or prominent is it on the world stage today?
Let's look at it from four angles. Number one, the participants itself. There used to be 10 to 12 teams taking part. Now there's 24 teams playing in the tournament. And there's actually a proper qualifying tournament. That means more than 24 teams are trying to get into the World Cup, number one. So in terms of team participation, country participation, there is definitely an increase. Mm-hmm. Number two, viewership. 100% increment from 1991. I don't have the specific statistics at the moment, but I recall reading there is a huge increase of viewership. So every World Cup soccer or football for ladies is millions of people are watching the game. Thirdly, is the amount of sponsorship. What was meant in the early days was a fairly trivial sponsorship. Now sponsorship goes into millions of US dollars invested into the tournament, and most of the major usual team players of sponsorship, like, you know, if I can name them, Adidas, Nike, Coca-Cola, they are all in. The fourth one is the amount of players playing. So what was usually a European and American game, China has taken women's soccer very seriously. Asia has come in very strongly. Southeast Asia, not yet, but it's coming up. And the entire Europe has a proper ladies' league. There's even a proper Champions League style in Europe for football, soccer. Mm-hmm. And of course, but the center of women football at the moment looks like it's in the USA.
So you can look up the full podcast under Live and Learn. Just search for discrimination in women's football.
Yeah, so basically women's football was way too popular for the boys to handle. and so they decided to ban it. And that's in 1921. And then by the time the ban was lifted in 1971, you know the women's side suffered a 50-year setback in its development while the men's side continued to soar. And 20 years after the ban was lifted in 1991, that was when the first Women's World Cup was held.
I did not know that. Because, you know, the general assumption is that, oh, women's football isn't popular because nobody really cares, right?
Yeah.
It was a sort of conscious decision to hold it back as a sport.
Yeah.
You know, by 1999, in the third edition of the WWC, when the US hosted and then won their second title, women's football actually grew in leaps and bounds, in the US at least. So they by now have a strong collegiate system. And then European countries followed suit, riding on the popularity popularity of men's football and the strong football culture in general in countries like France, Germany, Spain, Sweden, and of course England.
Yeah, so you guys follow women's football?
No, I don't even follow football in general. Just in general.
Actually, to be fair, I've watched bits and pieces that people share on social media. Mm-hmm. And mostly I like reading the articles because right. they're so empowering.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm not a big sports person in right. general. But I do know that the current UEFA women's champion, the Netherlands, beat Sweden in extra time to reach the Women's World Cup final for the first time. And they will be meeting the reigning World Cup holder, I think, the US,
yes.
right?
Yes.
On Sunday. So I know that much. And meanwhile, Sweden has booked a spot in the third place playoff against England on Saturday.
And speaking of England, I was there for the first 3 weeks of the Women's World Cup, and virtually everyone was following the tournament, whether it's casually, whether it's, you know, they're seriously following it. But the point is that everyone knew that it was happening. And this is something that's pretty unique because in the previous Women's World Cup, most people don't know that it's happening.
Yeah.
And you don't even get the coverage on your timeline. Like for you, Shamna,
yes.
you don't follow it, but you know it's happening because you see all the sideline, commentaries about it. Not specifically about the games, but, you know, all the social issues that come with it, right?
Particular, especially.
Yes,
And in fact, the first semi-final match between England and USA drew the highest peak audience of 2019 for the BBC with 11.7 million viewers. So the former Football Association chief executive Martin Glenn says that the World Cup has moved women's football from an Olympic spot to the mainstream. It is now the fourth time a new record for women's football was recorded by the BBC. So just to give you a picture of, you know, what this means is in the group stage in June 9th, there was a stage clash between England and Scotland, and they drew in 6.1 million viewers. And on July 2nd, in the semi-finals versus the USA, they drew the highest ever viewership of 11.7 million, which is equivalent to 50.8% available audience in the country.
And almost a doubling of the number of viewers,
And they thought the 6.1 million, the group stage, was huge because that was the first record, and they kept breaking that record.
Yeah, and those are just the BBC's figures. In Brazil, for example, which has a huge football watching population, they drew 35 million viewers when they played host France in the knockout stage, which is a big deal.
Yeah, that's the whole of Malaysia, basically.
Yeah,
35 million.
Yeah.
Although they have a population of about 200 million people. But, you know. So then the question is, do you think that women's football is only for women?
To watch or to play? To watch,
well,
right?
Obviously to play.
Well, what I mean is, you know, like to be an active sort of follower and go to matches, or like casually?
Sure. Spectator on TV kind of sport.
I find it exciting in the sense that until very recently, we only talked about stuff like this when it came to male football.
Yeah.
Male football.
Men's football.
Men's football. And the fact that we are even now calling it men's football instead of football and women's football is cool.
Yeah.
I think it's a good move, and it shows that non-sports fans are also talking about it.
Yeah. Mm. And I think, unlike here in Malaysia, where football is very male-dominated, not just as a sport, but also as a spectator sport, I've noticed that in Europe and in North America, sports in general is a cultural thing. It's the whole family. They go to watch, whether to a pub or to the games itself. You see male, female, children, adult, everyone is watching the games.
So one of the things that I found quite interesting about the US culture is because they also have American football, right?
Yeah.
And that's not open to women in terms of in university or high schools.
Mm.
So soccer, which, you know, is what they call football, ended up, so when I was there, I found that a lot of young women were gravitating towards football because for them, it gave them the chance to play a sport that wasn't sort of feminized in that way. And still not feel like they were being excluded because, you know, the huge culture of American football was something that wasn't accessible to them.
I think that is the only country where the women's side is more popular than the men's side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, Nike has announced that the USA Women's World Cup shirt, it is its best-selling jersey of all time compared to any other in a single season.
That is very, very cool.
Yeah.
So, Tina, you are obviously the fan here.
Yes, very much so.
What is the significance of Lyon being the host city for the grand finale?
Yeah, so actually the Women's World Cup is played all across France because they have such a huge football culture. So they want people to see all the different stadiums that they have. But Lyon is the perfect host for the grand finale as well as the third place playoff because it is known to be the destination for elite football, elite female football players. The home team, the women's side, has won the Champions League for four. It's historic. It's the four consecutive years, and it is the highest ranking women's club in UEFA. And the first ever female Ballon d'Or winner, Ada Hegerberger, who doesn't play in this World Cup, she plays in Lyon. She's not playing the Women's World Cup, not because Norway is not competing, but because she's protesting over the treatment of women's football in her home country.
Wow, so okay.
She's the star. She's the best in the world based on winning the Ballon d'Or, but she's not playing to make a statement. It's one of those, probably one of those articles that you've been reading.
Yes. So her and Megan Rapinoe, am I saying that right?
Rapinoe.
Yes. They are obviously the ones that have been making a lot of the international headlines.
Yeah.
Not just for the sport, but because the larger politics of the scenario, right?
Yeah. And I remember my interview with Richard, he did say, or I think it was Leslie maybe, that the Soccer Federation actually spends less resources promoting women's football because the argument is always that they don't bring in as much profit for them. But, you know, hopefully this time around we would see an improvement in that because there is more interest. Mm. It does generate interest. Mm.
You could look at the, you know, I mean, I watch every single game. And you can see that the stands are full, right? And these are people that flying from all over the world, not just, I mean, obviously they're more European countries, but you have everyone there. It's always full. It's diverse, you know, it's not just little girls that are going to watch, it's everyone. And, you know, you can catch the third place playoff and the final match on Astro, actually, at 11 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, respectively. Check out the crowd. The final between the U.S. and the Netherlands, there, so the team's supporters have some of the most colorful, loudest people in the crowd. So the American Outlaws and the Dutch Orange Festival or whatever it is. They will go to the street and make a lot of sound. It's a festival. Check it out.
Right. And on our next story, we are asking you a question. We're asking you on Twitter, do you think that all international students in Malaysia are treated fairly? Your options are yes, no, or it depends on their race. So you can join that conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900.
So that's coming up after Rise by Solange.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.